I want to welcome to the program William Stark. He is from the International Christian Concern, which is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit group out of Washington, D.C. I think it's very important that we all learn about this group, especially in the light of Christian persecution that is going on now throughout the world. William, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Why don't we start out with your describing for us what exactly is International Christian Concern? What do you do?
Yeah, International Christian Concern is a not-for-profit organization that serves persecuted Christians around the world. We primarily do this in three different ways. We call that the three A's here at ICC. First, we raise awareness about Christian persecution that's happening. Often here in the West, a lot of churches don't know or don't understand persecution fully. One of our jobs is to help, you know, the church understand that and become more aware of it. Also, we actually practically assist those who are persecuted. This can look like, you know, providing medical expenses or medical needs for those injured in something like a church bombing. It can also be answering longer-term needs such as, you know, educational expenses for Christian minorities who don't get a good education in a country because of persecution. Finally, we also do advocacy for persecuted Christians here based in Washington, D.C. We work on, you know, promoting hearings, reports, and other things amongst U.S. government officials to help promote the rights of persecuted Christians around the world.
Well, it is very timely for us to be speaking to you. This morning, I watched the United States ambassador to the U.N. speaking about the situation in Aleppo. And she stated, "Have you no shame," to the governments of both Syria, and I believe she was directing it to the government in Russia as well, to the constant bombardments and the killing of innocent Christians and also people who are non-Christian, the Muslims that live there. But today I want to go specifically to the issue of the recent bombing in Cairo. Can you give us an update on that and how many terrorist attacks have happened to the Christians in Egypt in the past year?
Yeah. On December 11th, Sunday morning, a bomb went off in St. Mark's Cathedral in Cairo, Egypt. As a result of that, 25 Christians were killed and another 50 who were attending the service at St. Mark's were injured. Primarily amongst those killed and injured were women and children. The bomb actually went off in the women and children section of this Orthodox Christian church. This is really the first time in 5 years since a major terrorist attack like this has happened for Christians in Egypt. Looking back at it, 2011 in Alexandria, I think it was January 2011, there was a bombing at All Saints Church in Alexandria, and in that incident, 21 Christians were killed. This morning, ISIS actually took credit or claimed responsibility for this bombing and actually further warned of an escalation in their war on what they call polytheists within Egypt, which is often a term that, you know, more conservative or more radical Islam or radical Muslims use for Christians within Egypt.
And they do that because the Muslims believe that the Christians believe in three gods, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Exactly.
It's really a tragedy, and it speaks to how cowardly these individuals are when they have to go and bomb in churches while services are going on, men and women, but in this case, women and children. What a tragedy. You know, historically, I believe Egypt protected not only the people today, but even Jesus when Mary and Joseph fled from Herod, and the Christians in Egypt take great pride in this. So let me go sort of take a step back from the situation and ask you, what is the percentage in Egypt of Christians today?
Yeah, Christians make up about 10% of Egypt's population officially. If you actually talk to church leaders on the ground, they dispute this and say their percentage of the population is larger than that. But officially, they make up 10%, which is about 10 million overall.
So that's a sizable population.
Exactly. That's one of the largest Christian populations within the Middle East.
Let me ask you this. How common is it that a bomb will go off during a service? I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I mean, in Egypt specifically, I think that's a fairly rare occurrence. Again, going back to the All Saints Church bombing in 2011, that's the most recent bombing besides this one at St. Mark's. But if you look at the Middle East overall, and maybe extending out to South Asia a little bit further in the Islamic world, attacks on Christians celebrating or worshiping in a church is honestly not that uncommon. In Pakistan, for example, last year there was a bombing in Gulshan Iqbal Park, which was in Lahore, Pakistan. Specifically, it happened on Easter Day, and when the Taliban actually took credit for the incident, they said they were targeting Christians that were in the park celebrating. The year before that, in 2015, there were two churches in Lahore. There was in Johannabad specifically, which is a Christian neighborhood of that city, in which two churches were attacked by suicide bombers. Ultimately, I think 19 Christians were killed in those incidents. And then if you go back to 2013, again in Pakistan, there was a bombing at All Saints Church on a Sunday right after the church service had let out, and over 100 Christians actually died as a result of that attack as well. So if you actually expand it out from Egypt to a little bit further, attacks on churches where Christians are worshiping actually is, unfortunately, a common tactic for terrorist organizations.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very sad and very pathetic on them, really.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I can imagine that people, faithful people, feel at risk now when they would attend services. So what do you recommend from your experiences? How do people deal with that sort of fear and anxiety? It's not, and that's not sort of anymore. It's real, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think in my conversations with Christians in Egypt on the ground, just in the last couple of days, there's definitely a mixture of feelings. There's, you know, the shock of this has happened. I mean, it's been 5 years since something similar has happened, so it's a very shocking event for many Egyptian Christians. But also there's a lot of fear around it, and now especially that ISIS has claimed responsibility and said they're going to continue to, as they said, escalate their war. That creates a lot of fear for Christians who are looking at the Christmas season, in which Christians are probably at their most visible within the Middle East and are really scared to actually attend church. I remember back to 2015, actually after these two Johannabad bombings, I was in Pakistan a couple days later, and I was actually visiting with the churches in Johannabad, and that was going into the Easter holiday itself. And in fact, I actually celebrated the Easter holiday in Lahore with the Christians who were, you know, terrified another one of these bombings could happen again. Initially, when I actually got to Lahore, my expectation was for, you know, many of these Christians to just not go to church, to hide away, to say, okay, you know, this is where if we gather here, we could be bombed again. But Palm Sunday was the first day I went to a large cathedral in Lahore, and I was expecting to kind of see, you know, an empty church. And really, it was the opposite of that. We got into the church, and it was a larger gathering than normal. A lot of Christians really wanted to show that, you know, as a community, they weren't going to allow these terrorists to, you know, stop them from worshiping. You know, despite their desire to go out there and, you know, show the terrorists what, you know, what they believe in, there also, I could tell, was a high level of tension within the church itself. You know, as we sat there in the pews listening to the sermon and worshiping, I could definitely tell a lot of people would turn and look to the back, checking to see what was happening. I mean, it took us a long time to actually get into the church. It was about two or three blocks out from the main church that we were going to that the security protocol started. You had to get out of your car. You had to walk. Once you were walking for a ways, then you had to go through a metal detector. You couldn't bring any bags with you. So but despite all of these security, you know, measures being taken around the church, there still is definitely this palpable fear. I guess, you know, with that experience in mind, I would encourage the Christians who face these kind of threats to continue to endure, you know, the persecution that they're going through, but also to take, you know, reasonable security measures to make sure something like this doesn't happen again.
William, it's been a really very interesting conversation with you. Clearly, you're very knowledgeable in this, and I imagine you've seen quite a bit in the work you do and heard a lot. So let me ask you, I guess it's might be a simple question, but I tell you something, it must be something people are thinking about. What does it take, then, to have peace on Earth?
It feels like that's a simple question, but it's a very complex answer, you know? Really, it takes, you know, the second coming, almost, in my mind, for peace to truly be brought on Earth. You know, the total reclaiming of creation by Christ when he comes again. I mean, as it is in the Bible, as you see in the Gospel and in throughout the Bible, we need to be looking forward to that day when Christ will return and will actually set right the wrongs that are here. But until that time, we're called not just to, you know, endure the persecution that is dished out and Christ did tell us is going to happen, but also Christ has called us further to love our enemies, which is among the more challenging things that he commissioned us with before he left. In the cases of a lot of the persecuted Christians I've talked to, the most amazing testimonies I have seen are Christians who not only endure the persecution that they go through, but also continue to express and show the love of Christ despite the persecution that they've experienced. I think of this pastor in India that I've been working with for a number of years now. He's been in prison for the last 8 years before a crime that he didn't commit. And he's actually imprisoned with a number of people who hate and persecute Christians almost on a daily basis. A number of these guys who he's imprisoned with are known murderers of Christians in the 2008 Cunnamulla riots. And I actually had an opportunity to interview with him in April, and he told me that one of the best things about his imprisonment is he's been able to reach out to those people who were at one point the enemies of Christ, and because he's enduring the persecution that he's going through and continuing to practice his faith that he's in prison for, and two, continue to show the love of Christ to people that, you know, would easily or commonly be referred to or thought of as his enemy, because of that testimony, he's actually reaching these people that were, you know, the killers of Christians just 8 years ago. So really, that's in my mind, the enduring story of the persecuted church is not just, you know, them suffering or being faithless victims or something like that. It's their individual stories in which they endure persecution, but not only that, but continue to reflect Christ's love and Christ's image to the world in spite of the persecution that they face.
Thank you, William. Thanks very much for stopping by today to talk with us. William Stark from the International Christian Conservative.